generous support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of O'Connor, Dumais, Aaliyah, and McTernan. Ray Radigan's Restaurant, your place for fine food, quality prepared, and proudly served since 1933, located in Pleasant Prairie. The Wastosha Veterinary Hospital, located on Highway 50 in Salem. And finally, the Agape Chiropractic Center in Lake Villa, Illinois. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very pleased to introduce our very special guest today, Mr. Alan Young, star of the motion pictures and television. And now, here's Alan.
Thank you, Steve. Hello, this is Alan Young. I hope you remember me from television's Mr. Ed, but I also starred in the 1960 George Pal motion picture, The Time Machine. It's a real pleasure to be with you today via this technology of having my voice travel through time and space to you. Ladies and gentlemen, the WGTD Radio Theater and the 91.1 Players are proud to present The Time Machine by H.G. Wells. This story is today adapted by Stephen Brown and Michael Ulstrup. I hope you enjoyed today's show. I'm looking forward to hearing it myself.
Welcome to our radio theater performance this morning of the well-known immortal story of H.G. Wells, The Time Machine. Please indulge me to take a minute to talk about the concept of time. There are four dimensions, three of which we call the planes of space, and the fourth, time. There is, however, a tendency to draw an unreal distinction between the former three dimensions and the latter, because it happens that our consciousness moves intermittently in one direction along the latter from the beginning to the end of our lives. Though some people talk about the fourth dimension, most do not know they mean to do so. It's only another way of looking at time. There's no difference between time and any of the three dimensions of space except that our consciousness moves along it. But some foolish people have got hold of the wrong side of that idea. Journey with us now to the year 1899, London, the library at the home of Professor Randolph Filby, where he is dictating some notes to a secretary.
And let me continue by saying that any discussion we have about this time machine story is ultimately not a deep scientific investigation into relativism and time. Somehow we completely ignore one of the paradoxes of time travel that many believe prohibits its existence, that of cause and effect. For instance, if there were time travel, then someone could go back in time and kill his past self. But this is impossible, since his future self would not exist in the first place. But enough of this physics dimensional mumbo-jumbo. Oh, yes, those horses are trying to keep their best to keep me on track. Let me tell you about Professor Dudley. When I first met him, I thought of him as having one of those intellectual minds that was tragically too brilliant. Whether it was due to the pressure of trying to outdo himself or out of complete frustration of being constantly misunderstood or just out of utter boredom, no matter what the cause, I was quite certain he was mad. And I wasn't alone. That's how his guests talked about him behind his back. Well, they would politely smile and understandingly nod their heads during his monthly dinner parties, secretly grateful more for the food than for the company or conversation. I was honored to have been invited more than a few times, knowing that his guest list usually included renowned university professors, independent scholars, and other men of distinction. However, one night, as it did on quite a few occasions, The conversation involved time travel, a subject that Professor Dudley was more than passionate about. This would make most of his guests uncomfortable and cause them to leave earlier than usual. Well, Professor, I suppose I should be off as well.
Suit yourself, Philby. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, sir. I'm grateful to be included on your guest list.
Yes, I suppose you are.
Good night, then.
Yes, sir. Do you really believe it, sir? Do you really believe that one can travel through time?
It's been done.
Sir?
I've done it, and so have you. We can't avoid time travel. It's our normal state of being.
Yes, of course, but traveling back and forth in time like you suggested tonight, do you believe that's possible?
Philby, my friend, it's a certainty. If your mind isn't as tightly sealed as my other guests, you should come with me and see what I've been working on for the last 3 years.
All right. You have an impressive laboratory, Professor.
Thank you. Now, look here. Look, what do you think?
Well, it looks like one of those horseless carriages, but where are the wheels? What's that huge crystal disc in the back? Is that a new kind of engine?
It's a time machine.
Dudley, you are mad. A time machine?
Yes, my friend, a time machine.
This thing?
This very thing.
This contraption? This framework made of quartz and bronze and ivory with its levers and its dials and seats in the middle?
I promise you, Philby, that on this machine a man can go wherever he likes in time. By working these levers, he can choose his century, his year, his very day.
Oh, but really, Professor?
Like I told you tonight, time is only a kind of space. If we can move about in all the other dimensions of space, why not in time, too?
Oh, you just can't ride back and forth through time. It's impossible.
Well, what are the journeys I've already taken on this little contraption?
Well, I'm afraid you've been having a bad dream.
Very well. You shall have proof, my friend.
How?
Just climb on, Philby. Sit in this seat beside me. Face these ivory dials, and I'll take you for a little ride through time.
Well, you mean right now?
Right now.
Well, in case this thing should take off like a flying red horse, are there any
preparations? No, Philby. You won't need any luggage on this trip, not even a toothbrush. You'll be back here in my laboratory in less than a minute.
Oh.
Before you climb aboard, please tell me, what time is it?
It's just past... Half past 10 in the evening.
Good. Be so good, if you would, as to leave your watch hanging on that coat rack.
Over here?
Yes. Now, let's get ourselves seated.
All right. I'm on. Now what?
Hold tight. It sways a good deal. I'd hate to lose you.
Yeah, I can't be frightened, Dudley.
Then you're braver than I am.
Yes.
Before we start, I want to adjust this control a bit.
Is everything ship-shape?
Tell me, did you notice anything just then?
Well, only a noise, a humming noise, nothing else.
And what time is it?
Well, you just asked me, Professor, and you told me to leave my watch over there on the... That's odd. My watch says 8:45, but it was just after 10 a moment ago that... Well, there must be something wrong with it.
It's only that I touched the lever to test it, and we've gone forward. A full day, 22 1/4 hours at any rate.
Well, yes, but Dudley...
Finished scoffing, Philby?
Yes, I believe I have.
Then hold tight. This will be the real article.
I'm ready, Dudley.
Good man. Well, say goodbye, Philby. Say goodbye to 1899.
We went off with a shattering jolt, with the machine swaying under us. The walls of Dr. Dudley's laboratory suddenly fell away. Night was speaking. speeding after day like the flapping of a huge bird's wing. Ah, I saw the sun hopping across the sky, leaping swiftly across it every second, and every second marking a day. I saw the moon spinning through her quarter like a ball from new to full, all in the twinkling of an eye. Trees grew and blossomed like puffs of smoke and then passed away. All the while we were going faster. Now our pace was a year a second, so that second by second the white snow flashed across the world and was followed by the brief, bright spring, and still we went on into the future.
How do you feel, Philby?
Very weak. Very dizzy.
Don't let go. Don't fall off.
Where are we? How far have we come?
We're in 100,050 and 60 and 70.
Well, that's enough. Stop it. I can't stand it anymore. Stop it.
Philby, you all right?
Yes, I believe so. No broken bones. What happened?
Not sure. Must have stopped too suddenly.
Where are we, Dudley?
Look around for yourself. A wide lawn, a beautiful vast garden.
I meant geographically.
Just where we were when we started in my laboratory, where my laboratory stood, sir.
And the year, Dudley? What is the year now?
100,080.
It seemed absolutely incredible. A dream. And a pleasant one, for the garden in which we found ourselves was beautiful and summery, with an unexpected perfume about it, almost like platine. At some distance, we could see a large and imposing building, and everything was quiet and peaceful, but almost too much so. And a sense of strangeness, an incredible strangeness, sent a shiver up my spine.
100,080. Philby, do you want to go back?
Yes, I rather think I do.
All right. Maybe now we'll go to 1066 or 1,000,000 B.C.
Dudley, did you hear that?
From over there in the bushes.
It sounded human.
Come on.
Why, it's a child. It seems to be a very small girl.
There's been a beast here. Of some kind that struggled with her. Look at the marks on her arm.
Now, my dear, you'll be all right now. You won't be harmed. Of course, she wouldn't understand English.
She's motioning to us to go with her.
What about the animal? Did you see it?
No, not a glimpse. Too fast for us.
Perhaps we'd better go back, Dudley. The girl seems to be all right now.
Leave her like this?
Yes. Yes, I've had enough.
Well, they haven't, Philby, because they're here, all around us.
They had crept up on soundless feet to surround us, the little people of this era, and the girl we'd saved was not a child, but a full-grown woman. They all stood 4 feet high in simple tunics, beautiful creatures, but terribly frail with a plump and soft kind of frailty. They were like eerie figures in a dream, and all we could hear was the rustling of their clothes as they circled happily around us, their faces wreathed in smiles. Why, they're not savage at all. They're very loving and gentle little people.
Yes, yes, but there's something terribly wrong with them.
Well, how do you mean?
They seem to have the minds of 5-year-olds.
Well, how do you expect them to be?
Far ahead of us, of course. Incredibly ahead of us in knowledge and science. Look at them. Children.
They seem to be happy in this huge garden of theirs. Dudley, I've changed my mind. Let's stay. Maybe we should enjoy spending a few days with our little friends. The little people led us home into their valley. They lived in colossal buildings, sleeping all together in one huge hall, eating in another, playing and frolicking in the sunshine. And we lived with them for days in utter contentment. One afternoon, Dudley and I walked along the banks of the great river.
Philby, have you noticed that the little people all wear the same clothes? They have the same soft, hairless skin, the same feminine roundness of limbs.
I wonder if it's because they're all vegetarians.
They're vegetarians because they have to be. You haven't come across any horses or dogs or cattle of any kind, have you?
No, Professor, now that you mention it.
With good reason, all extinct by now, just as the dinosaur is with us. Such a strange and different place our Earth has become.
Yes, I actually prefer it in some ways. Less noisy, more pastoral.
With little sheep for people.
Pardon?
You know what I'm talking about, Philby. As a scientist, I want to learn all there is to know about them and their culture. But I find myself frustrated at their lack of, well...
Humanity?
Yes, yes, exactly. With the exception of that girl we rescued. Anytime I try to communicate with them, they all break out into laughter.
I was trying to teach some of them English, but I began to feel like an unpopular schoolmaster amidst children.
Very disinterested children. One moment they come up to us with eagerness, and the next they wander away to something else.
Well, you sound as if you're disgusted.
Perhaps. It seems to me that we've happened on mankind upon the wane, its sunset, if you will.
Well, what makes you say that?
Strength is the outcome of need. Security sets a premium on feebleness. We come from a time when we're trying to make life more comfortable with electricity, connected with telegraphs and wires, and more secure and convenient with the power of steam. All these things are making our lives better, a true civilizing process.
Well, how can that be bad? What happened? Where did we go wrong?
Come now, Philby. The work of ameliorating and improving the conditions of life must have gone steadily on to a climax. One triumph of a united humanity over nature had followed another. Things that are for us mere dreams had become projects deliberately put in hand and carried forward. And the harvest is before us in these playful grown children, devoid of ambition. What a waste!
I can't put my finger on it, Dudley, but it doesn't add up. There's something strange here, something hidden away, silent. The year 100,080 may look pretty, but I can't help feeling that we're being spied on.
We think alike, Philby. See this?
Oh, those are the control levers of the time machine?
I took the precaution of removing them and putting a master padlock on the main switches. I don't much fancy the idea of someone riding away with it into another century and leaving us here for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, that makes me feel a little better. The city is so completely different now. I can make out a few geographical landmarks, an ancient building from our time here and there, but even the river seems to be miles from where it used to flow.
Yes, quite extraordinary. Come on, then. Let's head back to the little people's shelter and gather our things. I've seen enough of this paradise.
I'm inclined to agree with you. Wait, Dudley, do you know where we are?
Yes, of course. This is near where we landed.
I thought so. I wasn't sure.
Why did you ask?
I can't see the machine anywhere.
What?
The machine's not here.
They've taken it away. They've stolen it.
This is where it was, right? It was right here.
Look, Philby, tracks. Look here, where they've dragged it over here. Come along. Down this path. Look, right there, the monument. They took it to the monument.
Tracks. Stop. At those brass doors on the base.
Open up, you little thieves!
The doors, they're locked. Dudley, did you hear that?
Something's behind the doors. Sounds like movement and faint laughter, but...
But what?
Nothing. The machine must be in there.
Yes.
Inside. Let's go for look for something to pry the doors open and break them down. We must get in there. Come on.
How can we? What can we use?
Here, use those ladders.
Oh, all right. I'll try.
All right, right. Break them down on three. One, two, three.
Ah! It's no good, Dudley. They're solid. They'll never break through.
Never? Never? There's got to be a way. There's always a way.
The doors are solid.
I spent the last 3 years building that machine. I am not going to let a simple door stand in the way of our only way of going home.
Oh. I just realized. We may never go home again.
Why take the time machine? Why?
We were caught in the year 100,080. The time machine was gone. The brass doors of the monument held. Our retreat was cut off. The thin line by which we could make our way back home. Back to our own time. Our own people. Back to 1899. Broken. And the little people's language was still a mystery. Anytime we tried to communicate with them, it was met by howls of laughter. But it wasn't hostile. They weren't taunting us. Their attitude was innocent. They were more like simple, wondering children. Only one, the young woman whose life we had saved on the first day, became really friendly and was able to tell us her name. It was Rina. She always kept close. She went with us wherever we walked and slept near us at night in the hall. She'd always make us garlands and bring us flowers, which she would sometimes drop in our pockets. The very thing being somewhat of a mystery to her, along with grass or whatever she fancied at the time. I was pleasantly surprised that Dudley wasn't furious at her for this. I suppose the main thing was we had a friend. And as time went on, we were able to teach her a few words in English. Now that we could get across some ideas, we redoubled our efforts like men racing against the clock so that we might speak to her and discover the secret of our immense loss. We were talking to her one night after the others had gone to sleep.
No, not we, Dudley, no.
How can you be so sure your people didn't steal the machine? Aren't there any thieves among them? Are they all perfect?
Not so loud, Dudley. You'll wake them. Besides, she doesn't understand.
The thief must be sleeping somewhere in this hall. Weena, they take machine.
No, Dudley, no.
Who then? Who took it, Weena?
We are friends.
Yes.
We must have machine.
Yes, Dudley, yes.
Who took machine? Other people? Not yours?
Other?
What about those doors, Weena? Doors open?
No, no.
Weena, machine in there must open.
No, no, not open. Not open. Bad, bad.
All right, never mind. Go to sleep. Get some rest.
Yes, Dudley. Sleep now.
What's to become of us, Philby? Are we caught here in this century to spend our lives with the little people and their secret?
We'll go back to the monument tomorrow. We'll find a way of breaking in. Good night, Dudley. Dudley! Dudley!
Yeah?
Did you just... There it was again!
What?
Something on my face! Cold, filthy to the touch on my face and in my hair. It's cold. It's death, Dudley.
You're right. There's something in here with us. Smells of the grave. What was it?
I don't know, but look at them. Look at the little people.
It's as though they've been stampeded. Let's get out of here. I want some fresh air.
We went quickly from the hall and outside, away from the little people. The moon was full, just overhead, and it was close to dawning. There was a faint sound speeding close behind us. And we turned, our nerves ragged, our muscles tense. But it was only Weena coming swiftly to join us.
Dudley, I'm afraid. Dark.
Then there is something.
What do you mean, Weena? Dark? What?
Dark things. Dark place. Night.
Why should they be afraid of the night, Dudley?
It's not the night alone. Dark place. That's our clue.
Perhaps it's something underground. It was another day. We had wandered into a lovely wooded place about a mile from the community. Suddenly, Weena screamed.
Philby!
We stopped short. A pair of glaring eyes were fixed upon us. As we stood there, petrified, the thing, a little ape-like figure, rushed across our path and disappeared in the clearing about 30 yards away. What was it?
I couldn't see it too well. It seemed to be a dull white thing with white hair on its head and on its back.
It looked like a small ape.
It was running on all fours with its arms held very low.
Weena, what was it?
Morlock! Morlock!
Who are the Morlocks? What are they, Weena? Tell me.
No, no.
Let's go over and see where it disappeared. Come along, Philby.
clearing, we found a round, well-like opening. Dudley and I leaned over and looked down a deep shaft. A small, white creature was retreating down a ladder in the well. Like a human spider, its large white eyes watching us as it went swiftly down. And it disappeared in the shaft.
Philby, did you see it?
Like an ape, yes. But also like a man.
So there are two species of men in this world.
Yes.
The little people above the ground and this obscene thing, this bleached monster below.
That white look. Common to animals that live in the dark, like huge rats. Like worms that are cold to the touch, I know, because they've touched me.
Philby, can you feel the air being sucked down into the shaft?
Yes.
The earth must be tunneled enormously here under our feet. These monsters must live in the tunnels.
I think we know now who stole our time machine.
Yes, then...
Then we'll go down and have a look.
No, no, not go.
Why not, Weena?
Morlax, you never come back.
We must have our machine, my dear. You wait for us here.
No, no.
And so we went down, our heels ringing on the small metallic bars that were meant for creatures so much smaller than us. Down we climbed, down, down, ever in darkness, ever it seemed into the center of the earth, into the core of the world.
Won't you know until we reach the bottom? Can't be much further. Do you hear that? Like machinery. We're almost there.
Thank heaven for that.
Yes, all right, Philby. I'm on the bottom. Come along. Just a few more steps. Now, give me your hand, Philby. Good. Good, we're here.
Yes. In the land of the Morlocks.
Do you have a match?
Yes, here.
There seems to be a large vaulted chamber at the end of this passage.
What do you suppose they'll do if they catch us?
I have no idea. Better take care not to be caught. Ah, another match.
The throbbing noise.
Probably their ventilating system, pumping the air down. There must be thousands upon thousands of these Morlocks living under the earth.
Well, we haven't seen any yet, except for our friend who came down ahead of us. Why do you suppose they wanted our time machine?
I think they wanted us. Not the machine.
And we've come to them.
We must. It's our only chance. You know something, Philby? If that noise does come from the air pumps...
Yes?
Why is it so stuffy here, so oppressive?
I noticed that too. Dudley, what's that strange smell?
Blood.
Blood?
Light another match.
Look straight ahead, on the white metal table.
It's set for a meal.
Yes, with a small haunch. Do you see? Meat.
We know that the cattle are extinct.
Then what do they feed on, these Morlocks?
Don't you know?
Yes, I know.
Another match.
Right here, Dudley. I have no more. I've used our last match.
What ill planning. To think I didn't even bring a Kodak with us.
A lot of good it would do if we never make it back.
Of course. Well, without matches, we have no choice but to return to the surface. Come on.
Right behind you.
At any rate, we know the secret now. The Morlocks. Living here underground, they are masters of this age. And our friends up above are merely fatted cattle, fed by the Morlocks, clothed, supplied, and housed until the day when they're cut out of their herd and brought underground as food.
It's not the fading utopia.
No, this is the future you're looking at. This is our future.
Dudley, what is it in this darkness? I felt hands. Cold hands.
There are pipes along the walls. Do you feel them? Some are loose.
Did you get one? Give it to me.
Use it as a weapon. Lash out against the Morlocks.
Filthy, they're here beside me.
Use the pipe I gave you. Use the metal pipe, man.
They're all around us.
This way. Follow me this way. Back this way.
We went back in that evil darkness, fighting every step as we went. Back to those projecting bars, kicking and clawing ourselves loose from their talon-grasping hands and climbing up again, up toward daylight and freedom, away from their stench and the eagerness of their icy hands. And they did not follow, for daylight was their enemy and their great fear. And we lived among the lush gardens of the little people like prisoners, like men without reprieve, like men who are dead but still walk the earth. For the time machine was locked away behind great brass doors, and we knew we could never force them open. Then one day, Weena told us of an old building, an ancient sagging structure that had survived through many ages and was filled with many curious objects.
A museum. That's what it must be. A museum. Philby, perhaps from some earlier time.
And I'm in no mood to go looking at a museum.
Don't you see? Specimens are hermetically sealed in museums. Perhaps there are things, weapons, machinery, something we can use.
Yes. Yes, of course. If we could find some dynamite or gunpowder or something.
We could blast those doors. We could get in.
Where is this place, Weena? This old building that no one ever goes near.
I take you. It not far.
A chance, Professor. A slim one, but a chance nonetheless. All day we wandered through the great ruined halls. The building had been deserted, unused for perhaps a century. The childlike men of that time had long since ceased to care about anything but their own personal comforts. It was late afternoon and growing dark when we came upon the chemical section. We found nothing useful to us until then. Now came the worst disappointment of all.
And it's dust, all of it. It's been dust for countless centuries.
Another dead end.
It's hopeless. We were out of our minds to hope that nitrites would retain their form for 100,000 years.
We go now, if nothing here?
Wait. Just a moment. There's something in this case.
Well, you can break it with your lever.
Stand back a little, then. A box of matches. Hermetically sealed.
Wait, let me see it. Why, they're perfect. Solid and sound, they're not even damp.
What should we do with them? Burn down those brass doors?
Well, you'd better keep them. You can't tell.
Philby!
What?
On the floor. You see them. Small, narrow footprints leading away into the darkness at the end of this gallery.
Philby!
We'd better go.
Yes. Weena, pick her up, Weena. Carry her. We're going to have to make a run for it.
Now, don't be frightened, my dear. It'll be all right.
Go on, run!
We came out of the gloom of that place into the deeper gloom of the dusk, and suddenly we saw. We were trapped. All around us were the Morlocks. They were there by the thousands, surrounding us and coming closer. A long, even line of deathly white, their eyes blinking in the half-light. Tiny mouths alive with appetite.
Philby, the matches!
Yes, I have the matches.
Light a fire here in this dry grass. The forest around us is dry. Hurry, man! We have an inferno here. We'll have it here in a minute. Our little friends don't like light or heat.
The fire leaped high to the heavens, and the countryside was ablaze. The Morlocks turned in fear, blinded by the glare. Some of them plundered into the raging flames, and the rest faded away like a fog. Dudley had left a narrow passageway for our retreat, and we fled down a long corridor of leaping flames and blistering heat. We fled towards safety to the community of the little people. And as we ran, we passed the huge monument with its great bronze doors that were locked tight in our time machine. And suddenly, in the glare of that distant fire, we saw something that stopped us short.
They're open! Philby, the doors are open.
No, not go in, Dudley, no.
It's a trap. They're waiting for us inside.
Waiting or not, we're going in.
Dudley, it's suicide.
It'll take me 1 minute to screw the levers on again. Then I touch them and we're away.
All right. I'll try to give you your 1 minute.
Good man.
No, not go, not leave me.
Now you, my dear, you hold tight around my neck. You're coming home with us.
All right, let's go. Wait. Look, the machine. They haven't harmed it.
My goodness, it looks like they've cleaned and oiled it.
It's a trap, all right. They'll be around us at any moment.
I don't see them yet.
Come on now, quickly.
The doors, suddenly, they're closed. It's pitch black again.
Just get in the seat. I'll be ready in a moment.
I waited for the hum that would signal our departure. There in the darkness, the Morlocks were finally upon us. Cold, persistent fingers swarmed over my body, tugging at me and pulling me away from the machine. I held tight to Wiener's any man would hold fast to life. I tried to kick them away with my face.
Philby! Philby!
Hurry! Dudley, hurry!
I must fix these levers quickly or we're done. There, Philby. We're away. We're gone.
Yes. Yes. We made it.
You all right?
I'm all right.
Good. And Wiener?
Wiener isn't with us, Professor.
What happened?
They tore her from my hands. At the last second, they got their filthy cold talons around her. I tried to save her. I couldn't. I still have a piece of her tunic here in my fist. A little piece of her tunic, Dudley. Nothing else. And so we came back home again. Back into the very minute in which we had left. Back into 12 noon, October 6, 1899. We were in Dudley's laboratory again, motionless. Sitting on the ridiculous contraption which he has called the time machine. Was it all a dream? Did any of it happen? Could any of it happen? Of course not. How stupid. Then what of this? What of this piece of thin green silk I hold in my hand? What if?
In H.G. Wells' novel, The Time Machine, our protagonist jumped into a special chair with blinking lights, spun a few dials, and found himself catapulted several hundred thousand years into the future, where England has long disappeared, and is now inhabited by two groups of strange creatures, the Morlocks and the Eloys. That may have made great fiction, but physicists have always scoffed at the idea of time travel. One stubborn problem with time travel is that it is riddled with several types of paradoxes. For example, there's the paradox of the man with no parents. What happens when you go back in time and kill your parents before you are born? If your parents died before you were born, then how could you have been born to kill them in the first place?
excuse me, sir?
Philby, is that you?
Why, of course it is. There is also the paradox of the man with no past. For example, let's say that a young inventor is trying futilely to build a time machine in his garage. Suddenly, an elderly man appears from nowhere and gives the youth the secret of building a time machine. The young man then becomes enormously rich, playing the stock market, racetracks, and sporting events because he knows the future. Then, as an old man, he decides to make his final trip back to the past and give the secret of time travel to his youthful self. Where did the idea of the time machine come from?
Well, since you've opened the door on this post-mortem discussion, when Mr. Wells' story has concluded, let me add, not surprisingly, time travel has always been considered impossible. After all, Newton believed that time was like an arrow, Once fired, it soared straight in an undeviating line. 1 second on Earth was like 1 second on Mars. Clocks scattered throughout the universe beat at the same rate.
But does all of this mean that we still might be able to jump into H.G. Wells' machine, spin a dial, and soar several hundred thousand years into a future of some England? No, or at least not right now. There are a number of difficult hurdles to overcome. First, the main problem is one of energy. In the same way that a car needs gasoline, a time machine needs to have fabulous amounts of energy. One either has to harness the power of a star or to find something called exotic matter, which falls up rather than down, or find a source of negative energy. But enough. I shall leave all of that up to you and your listeners today.
Thank you, Professor. In 1988, Morris, Thorne, and Yurtsever published their conclusions in the journal Physical Review Letters that Einstein's equations really did allow for the existence of wormholes that link different times and could be used as time machines. We've also seen that the laws of physics do not preclude the possibility of time travel. And further, it may be possible to construct a time machine by tweaking naturally occurring objects in the universe. It would appear that we only need the technology to make time travel a reality. Which brings us back to H.G. Wells. Mr. Wells said the following: "It is possible to believe that all the past is but the beginning of a beginning, and that all that is and has been is but the twilight of the dawn. It is possible to believe that all the human mind has ever accomplished is but the dream before awakening." Herbert George Wells wrote The Time Machine in 1895. The basic principles of the machine contained materials regarding time as the fourth dimension. Years later, Albert Einstein published his theory of the four-dimensional continuum of space. Thank you for joining us today for H.G. Wells' immortal story, The Time Machine.
Alan Young's character Philby in the Time Machine movie back in 1960 had a premonition about that machine. And then 47 years later, this past week, he told me what his own perspective is about time travel. Once again, Alan Young.
"I have no desire to tempt the laws of providence. There is something to say about the common sense attitude to life. If that machine can do what you say it can, destroy it. Destroy it, George, before it destroys you."
"And I think that's what our fixation with time is. I think it's the lovely fantasy that mankind has in his own thoughts. That's my feeling. That's the way I feel anyway about it."
I'm Steve Brown, thanking you for joining us this morning for the very special production of The Time Machine. Michael Ostrup and I adapted the script from the radio drama series Escape. Our director today was Don Jensen, and as always, the award-winning WGTD Radio Theater featured members of the 91.1 Players. Our stars today, Terry Lawler as Philby, Rob Lamont as Dudley, Don Jensen as the narrator, and Victoria Ide as Lena. We appreciate the contributions of Mr. Alan Young, star of the 1960 motion picture The Time Machine, and welcome him into the WGTD and the 91.1 family. The audio director was Terry Steele, with production assistance provided by Michael Ostrup, Dan Sticka, Matt Davidson, and Michael Heigl. The producer of the WGTD Radio Theater is Jim Blair. Generous support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Wascosia Veterinary Hospital, located on Highway 50 in Salem. Ray Radigan's Restaurant, your place for fine food, quality prepared and proudly served since 1933, located in Pleasant Prairie. The Kenosha Law Firm of O'Connor, Dumay, Aaliyah, and Maternan. And finally, the Agape Chiropractic Center. I'm Steve Brown, thanking you for joining us today for the H.G. Wells The Time Machine on the WGTD Radio Theater.
You're listening to WGTD 91.1 FM in Kenosha and 101.7 in Elkhorn, NPR News and Classical Music.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A suicide attack in the Iraqi Shiite holy city of Kabul today is being blamed in the deaths of dozens of people. A car bomb exploded near the Imam Abbas Shrine. There was a similar attack in the area 2 weeks ago. That car bombing killed more than 40 people. The death toll from today's suicide attack in northwestern Pakistan is now up to 22. Authorities say dozens more people, including the interior minister, were injured in the area near Peshawar. The blast erupted as people gathered around the minister at the end of a public meeting, but police say several of the official security guards were killed in the attack. The U.S. Department of the Interior is planning to announce what it calls a major proposal to expand oil and natural gas development in federal waters. NPR's Allison Keyes reports.
The Washington Post, citing sources, says the plan will allow oil and gas drilling off the coast of Virginia, in the Gulf of Mexico off of Florida's coast, and also in Alaska's Bristol Bay. That bay has been closed to drilling since the 1989 Exxon Valdez tanker spill, but President Bush lifted the drilling ban in January. There's been a congressional moratorium on drilling off of the nation's Atlantic and Pacific coast since the 1982 oil spill, so lawmakers would have to approve any drilling near Virginia's eastern shore. Environmentalists say the Alaska Bay is a major fishing area for salmon. The Interior Department says in a statement the program will increase energy supplies while protecting the coastal and marine environments. Allison Keyes, NPR News, Washington.
A fire at an oil refinery in Oklahoma is still burning a day after being sparked by lightning. Authorities say they're trying to keep the blaze contained and could take another day or so for the fuel to burn. Lightning hit a tank containing about 50,000 barrels of an unrefined form of gasoline yesterday, triggering the fire. Authorities say a second tank containing about 30,000 barrels of diesel fuel also caught fire. There have been no reports of injuries. Turkey's military has indicated it wants to get more involved in the country's presidential election process. The military is concerned that Turkey's secular government may become more Islamist if Foreign Minister Abdullah Gül becomes president. The first round of voting yesterday ended with opposition leaders boycotting the vote. The BBC's Sarah Rainsford has more.
The military here, I have to say, sees its role very much as defending democracy here in Turkey. It believes it's part of the democratic process, and it worries that if what they believe is a pro-Islamic party is allowed to hold all the key reins of power here, then there will be no democracy in Turkey. But of course, I should say that the government denies that it has any religious agenda whatsoever. It says it's turned its back on its past, that it is not, they are not the politicians they used to be, and that they do want to join the EU, they do want to keep Turkey secular, and there's nothing to worry about at all.
The BBC, Sarah Rainsford. This is NPR.
The NPR shop celebrates Mother's Day by offering I Heard It on NPR, Ladies Jazz It Up. Get your mom all jazzed up at npr.org/shop.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UW-Madison School of the Arts at Rhinelander, featuring classes running July 22nd through 27th in various arts disciplines, from blacksmithing to writing. Information available at 877-336-7836.
Good afternoon, I'm Ruth Ann Bessman. This is the final half hour of Classics by Request on Wisconsin Public Radio. At 12:30 this afternoon, we head out to New York for Live from the Metropolitan Opera. Today it's Puccini's Il Tridico. We began this morning's program with a recording featuring music of Mstislav Rostropovich, one of the great musical figures of the 20th century, legendary cellist and conductor who died yesterday at the age of 80.